The Silence by John Galsworthy. 1. In a car of the Naples Express, a mining expert was diving into a bag of papers. The strong sunlight showed the fine wrinkles on his brown face and the shabbiness of his short, rough beard. A newspaper cutting slipped from his fingers. He picked it up, thinking, how the dickens did that get in here? It was from a colonial print of 3 years back, and he sat staring as if in that forlorn slip of yellow paper he had encountered some ghost from his past. These were the words he read. We hope that the setback to civilization, the check to commerce and development in this promising centre of our colony, may be but temporary, and that capital may again come to the rescue. Where one man was successful, others should surely not fail. We are convinced that it only needs... And the last words. For what can be sadder than to see the forest spreading its lengthening shadows like symbols of defeat over the untenanted dwellings of men? And where was once the merry chatter of human voices to pass by in the silence? On an afternoon 13 years before, he had been in the city of London, at one of those emporiums where mining experts perch before fresh flights like seagulls on some favourite rock. A clerk said to him, Mr. Scorrier, they're asking for you downstairs. Mr. Hemmings of the New Colliery Company. Scorrier took up the speaking tube.
Is that you, Mr. Scorrier? I hope you are very well, sir. I am Hemmings. I am coming up.
In 2 minutes, he appeared. Christopher Hemmings, secretary of the New Colliery Company, known in the city behind his back as Down by the Stern Hemmings. He grasped Scorrier's hand. The gesture was deferential yet distinguished. Too handsome, too capable, too important, his figure, the cut of his iron-grey beard and his intrusively fine eyes conveyed a continual courteous invitation to inspect their infallibilities. He stood like a city atlas, with his legs apart, his coattails gathered in his hands, a whole globe of financial matters deftly balanced on his nose. Look at me, he seemed to say. It's heavy, but how easily I carry it. Not the man to let you down, sir.
I hope I see you well, Mr. Scorrier, he began. I have come round about our mine. There is a question of a fresh field being opened up. Between ourselves, not before it's wanted. I find it difficult to get my board to take a comprehensive view. In short, the question is, are you prepared to go out for us and report on it? The fees will be all right.
His left eye closed.
Things have been very dicky. We are going to change our superintendent. I've got little Pippin. You know little Pippin?
Scorrier murmured with a feeling of vague resentment. Oh, yes, he's not a mining man. Hemmings replied,
We think that he will do.
Do you, thought Scorrier, that's good of you. He had not altogether shaken off a worship he had felt for Pippin. King Pippin, he was always called, when they had been boys at the Cranbourne Grammar School. King Pippin, the boy with the bright colour, very bright hair, bright, subtle, elusive eyes, broad shoulders, little stoop in the neck, and a way of moving it quickly like a bird. The boy who was always at the top of everything and held his head as if looking for something further to be the top of. He remembered how one day King Pippin had said to him in his soft way, Young Scorry, I'll do your sums for you. And in answer to his dubious, Is that all right? Had replied, Of course. I don't want you to get behind that beast Blake. He's not a Cornishman. The beast Blake was an Irishman, not yet 12. He remembered, too, an occasion when King Pippin, with 2 other boys, fought 6 louts and got a licking, and how Pippin sat for 30 minutes afterwards, all bloody, his head in his hands, rocking to and fro and weeping tears of mortification, and how the next day he had sneaked off by himself and, attacking the same gang, got frightfully mauled a 2nd time. Thinking of these things, he answered curtly, When shall I start?